Fan-run radio podcasters, many of you have been asking for a way to support the station if you live out of state and can't support our sponsors, and now there's a way. Just go to shopfanrun.com and buy a shirt, or two, or ten, and know that you're supporting the station that does our best to support you. Shopfanrun.com.
Fox Sports Knoxville is proud to present the show that the fans deserve.
I'd consider myself a realist, all right, but in philosophical terms, I'm what's called a pessimist.
The show that the city needs.
This town deserves a better class of sports radio. And we're going to give it to them.
This is Talk Sports with John Reed and Cody McClure.
Leave one wolf alive and the sheep are never safe.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves. Happy Wednesday to you as we come into the Fan Run Studios. John Reed, Cody McClure, Ben Lee. Intern Parker's got the Periscope fired up if you want to watch along. How are we this morning? Thumbs up from Ben Lee. Good to see it. Cody?
You didn't even look at Ben Lee before you said thumbs up.
Cody, how are you today?
I'm fine. Good to be here. Good to be anywhere. How are you?
I'm all right. Good to hear you last night on Voluntary Reaction. Seems like you guys had a pretty good show. Celebrating another big win. Tennessee, man, just keeps rolling. Tennessee just keeps rolling. Dominates Arkansas. It was about like what we said, right, in hour three, that Tennessee was going to be able to do whatever they wanted offensively. I said you could kind of name a score.
106.
Yeah. I was like, expect like a Georgia like first half, and I think they scored 50. What did they score in the first half last night? 56, 55 compared to Georgia was what, 54, 56, whatever it was. It was right on par with it. Tennessee could have named a score, and they pretty much did as they broke 100 easily. Arkansas doesn't guard the three-point line. A lot of open catch-and-shoot threes. Tennessee came out, busted heads from three-point range. Busted head from three-point range. Got a lot of open looks at the rim. Arkansas, not a good defensive team. Tennessee, it was good to see them come out and just lay the smack down like they have been. John Rothstein keeps calling them the Clubber Lang of college basketball. Now, I don't know if I like that comparison. I mean, I get it. Clubber Lang was notorious just for dominating his opponents, right? Mm-hmm. He ended up losing at the end of Rocky III.
Well, that's the fate for every team besides one.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know if I'm all the way with this analogy.
Remember, we're all going to die.
I guess who would you use as a comparison? Like, could you? I guess the only person who doesn't lose is Floyd Mayweather, right? It's not fun being the Floyd Mayweather of college basketball. You have to kind of stay away from that one, right?
Yeah, because of the history. And basically that means you're just on the defense all the time. You always win, but Virginia would be Floyd Mayweather. I feel like Virginia is Floyd Mayweather.
I don't know what other comparison we can make of someone who dominated and then didn't lose at the end. Because like you said, all those guys usually have their ending at some point. And I hope this Tennessee basketball team doesn't. Every night they play, more and more confident that this will be a Final Four team. Every time they take the court, I gain confidence in this team. Now, is there something to peaking too early? We'll see. We'll see.
We'll find that out in March.
Although I believe there are some numbers. I'll try to get Will Warren to track them down for me, my statistician. But there are some numbers that what you do in the first half of the season carries more weight in the NCAA tournament than peaking at the right time and doing it at the end of the year. That you kind of figure out who you are as a basketball team in the first half of the season, that's more likely to be who your true self is. I don't know if that's how accurate it is, but that's what the numbers have kind of pointed out for a while. I'll try to get the exact figures on it.
I would say more times than not, a team, I don't know. You think more times than not, a team that doesn't win their conference tournament wins the national title?
I don't know.
Because we always think about those teams that went on runs to end the year, like Michigan last year, UConn.
Michigan and UConn are two that jump out, for sure.
But Michigan didn't win the title.
They did not.
I'd be interested to see those numbers. What percentage of conference tournament champions are also the big tournament champions?
Last night was just a dominating performance. Dominating.
Indeed it was. Arkansas tried to seal the paint early in the game, and Tennessee hit all their open shots.
Yeah, it was a barrage of threes. And it's another game where Grant and Admiral are good. They're good. But you get a big-time 1-2 punch off the bench. Another awesome game from Jordan Bowden. Except this time it wasn't getting to the rim and getting to the free throw line. This time Jordan Bowden's like, I'm just going to bomb some threes. He started out the game 5 for 5. Just bombing threes. Lamonte Turner was all over the place last night in his minutes. All over the place. Scoring, shooting threes, disrupting on defense, leading fast breaks. He was awesome last night. Tennessee again with 5 players in double figures. 4 players over 15. It's just, what else can you say about this team right now? Coming off of a big win, what else can you say? What was the theme last night on voluntary reaction?
Well, Jordan Bowden and Lamonte Turner combined for, what was it? Let me find the numbers. But basically, we discussed how they are your fourth and fifth most important player, or fifth and sixth players, basically, that you would rank in terms of importance. And they kind of ran the show last night.
Yeah, Tennessee is deep in talent. Like, they have a bunch of dudes. That's what Alexander said a couple of games ago in terms of, well, it used to just be, let's try to get the ball into Grant and let him create offense.
Lamonte Turner and Jordan Bowden combined for 40 points and were 8 of 8 from 3.
I believe they started 3-3 and 5-5 from 3. They both ended up missing their last threes.
Well, at one point in time.
Yeah, they were 8-8. And I believe they finished 8 for 10. They missed their two last
attempts. That was when it was 91-61.
Yeah, yeah. They both missed another attempt. But, yeah, they both started 8 for 8. Combined. Yeah. 5 for 5 for Bowden, 3 for 3 for Lamonte. But it's like Kyle Alexander said. Used to be dump the ball into Grant, let him create offense. And then it was, okay, now Admiral's got it going. Let's get it to Admiral. He said now they're at the point where they just play ball and find the open guy and everyone on the floor can score and do something good. And that's the way it seemed with Alexander, you know, really getting good at that turnaround jumper in the lane. With Bowden becoming a versatile scorer, with Lamonte getting back healthy, you can't shut down Grant and Admiral and expect to beat Tennessee. You're going to have to play your A-plus game. And even that might not be enough. I don't know what else you say. I don't know what else you say. Tennessee could have named their own score. They could have scored as many points as they wanted. And right now, feels like Tennessee is going to repeat as SEC Player of the Year, right? They're going to have an SEC Player of the Year. Whether it's Grant, whether it's Admiral, whether it's a split, that'd be kind of cool if it was a split, SEC Player of the Year. And I would say that I'm 90% confident that at this point, Jordan Bowden's going to be your sixth man of the year in the SEC. So Tennessee's going to go back-to-back there. Now, I don't know if Barnes is going to get Coach of the Year. He should. He should, especially if Tennessee finishes somewhere like 15-3 in conference or better. Maybe Kermit Davis steals it from him because he's got Ole Miss playing better. Although Tennessee did have, I guess, one of their competitors for the crown suffer a bad-ish home loss as they were favored by 4 at home and really got dominated by LSU. I don't know if you look at that as a positive in terms of Ole Miss maybe not as good as we thought, or if it's, okay, LSU is the team we kind of thought they were.
I said last night that right now if Tennessee is at home and they play their best game, they're at this point in the season, they're 20 points better than anybody in the conference.
Tennessee's A game at home, 20 points better than anybody?
Their A game at home. I think for where everybody else is at right now, I think if Kentucky rolls into Thompson Bowling right now, we handle them. Maybe you don't say the same in March. I'm sure Auburn will be a formidable challenger, but I think right now we're clear and above the best team in the conference.
Snap reaction is that it seems a little extreme.
I don't know, man.
Like double digit, I say pretty confidently. 20 points, that one feels a little high. I mean, I get your point, and I'm not going to nitpick. I'm just saying, like, 20 is a pretty big statement. 20 is a pretty big statement.
We've been making big statements.
We have, and I definitely don't think anybody in the SEC could come into Thompson Bowling and beat Tennessee if Tennessee plays even a B-plus game. Like, I don't feel like anybody can come in and that their difference between, you know, a B-plus game from Tennessee and an A-plus game from anybody else in the conference, I don't think you're winning in Knoxville doing that. Tennessee can roll out a B-plus performance at home and beat anybody in the conference. Tennessee's got the second-best offense in college basketball right now.
Who's first?
I'll have to look.
They don't matter.
This is from our friend Will Warren at Gyrate Stats on Twitter. Offensive efficiency, number two in the country. Number two in the country.
And defensive efficiency, probably pretty high as well.
Yeah, these are just offensive numbers, so I'll have to look up defensive. Number two in the country in offensive efficiency. Number four in the country at 2-point field goal percentage. So Tennessee is getting easy looks, and they just you can't stop them around the rim type of thing. Second best offense in the country. I'll try to find out who's number one. Gonzaga? Okay.
Those damn Zags. They don't play anybody, though.
They've played Duke and Tennessee.
But, I mean, in their conference. Their numbers are only going to get better.
I would say their numbers will continue to stay high. Tennessee will eventually hit a rough part of SEC schedules, although I don't know how much better Arkansas would be than any team in the West Coast Conference right now. You know what I mean? Like, if you dropped Arkansas in there, they'd have some better athletes, but I don't know how much of a better basketball team they would be.
I think Arkansas, Florida, and who's the other team we beat?
Missouri.
Arkansas, Florida, Missouri, I think, are all borderline bubble teams looking on the outside. Or on the outside looking in right now.
Florida, man. Florida had another loss, another heartbreaker.
Yeah.
They have to start feeling snake bitten as they lose. Basically, it's a tie game with 3 seconds left. They give up a 3-point play in Starkville to lose. They're what, 9-7 at this point?
Yeah. I mean, it would take quite a run from them.
Yeah, I would definitely say they are on the outside of the bubble. I don't think they're on the bubble just yet.
No, they're not on the bubble, but I mean, I think any of those three teams could have worked their way into the tournament as a bubble team.
And Missouri and Arkansas, I don't think either one of those are tournament teams either. Point was, like, I think you could take all four of Tennessee's SEC opponents right now and drop them in the WAC or the WCC, wherever Gonzaga plays, and Florida would succeed. I don't know about the other three. I still think Florida's good, which is weird as we say that every time they lose. Like, they're not winning any games, but we keep thinking they're good.
The West Coast Conference is pretty bad. The best record besides Gonzaga is the San Francisco Dons, and they are 14-3.
According to TeamRankings.com, Tennessee is 43rd in defensive efficiency.
Okay.
BYU's 11-8, St. Mary's 11-7. So, really, nobody looks all that good there.
Yeah, St. Mary's used to be a good program. That was when you used to could pencil in Dellavedova, Patty Mills.
Used to be the one team that would give Gonzaga some games.
That used to be a game you'd want to sit around and watch. You'd kind of wait for Gonzaga St. Mary's.
I mean, what is going on with Pepperdine? They're 9-9 this year.
Wow. You say that, but Pepperdine's the one that's right on the beach, right? Pepperdine's college is right on the beach in California, right?
Most all of these are right on the beach.
But not like Pepperdine. Pepperdine's the one that's like just – it's like paradise when you go to it.
Is it?
It's weird that they you think they could recruit some good basketball players to come play at their campus. That is so beautiful. And they're 9-9. That's despicable.
It is beautiful. It is right there on the ocean.
Despicable. I don't know what else.
It's in Malibu.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Pretty nice.
You would think they would be able to recruit a better basketball team than 9-9.
I don't know. With all the fires that were rummaging through there, I don't know if it's still standing pretty or not.
I don't know what else to say about this Tennessee basketball team at this point. If you have anything you'd want to say, we'll open up the phone lines next segment. 865-546-8200 is Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Money your way. Sends in a picture of the dream team in Tennessee basketball. It says, spot the difference. There's not one. I mean, we do have some guys on the team who look like Christian Laettner. Right? I mean, there are a couple of those bench guys who could probably pass for Christian Laettner.
No need to be racist.
I'll say John Fulkerson is playing really well right now. Like, it might not show up in the stats. He might do some things that frustrate you at times, but you know, last night there was a moment right when he first got in the game where he's diving towards the basket, gets the ball, and immediately pivots and whips it out. I want to say to Bowden for a corner three, and it was beautiful basketball. Fulkerson kind of makes the right play a lot of times when he's on the court. Now, like I said, he'll frustrate you every now and then with his fouls, but for the most part, there's not a huge drop-off when he's on the court. This team's deep. They're good. I've got some things about the peaking too early. Would you like to hear some stats about the peaking too early? Do you care?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, we've already matched our win total from Barnes' first season, so I'd say we're peaking for sure. I hope we're not peaking too early. Tell me about peaking too early.
Well, I'm trying to look.
Well,
basically, so I got to reading. I was trying to work my way through it, and there wasn't anything that was like definitive that I could take to the radio. It was very. It's a bunch of numbers, and basic. Great.
This is like me trying to sort through a soccer headline.
I thought I had it, and then I get to actually reading what I was about to read that Will Warren sent me, and you know Will Warren. He sends the weird numbers, and I'm trying to decipher it, and eventually it's just, yeah, it's good.
The guy's just made of numbers.
It's just if you're good at the beginning of the year, you're good at the end of the year type of thing. Like, it just...
Makes sense to me.
Those are the numbers you have. Like,
good teams are good. Nailed it.
That's basically what it is. Like, basically, the teams that finished the top 10 were there at the halfway point of the season. Like, it said eight of the top 10 teams. Eight of the top 10 teams at the halfway point last year finished in the top 10. And the other two finished 11th and 12th.
So essentially, the peaking too early thing is just a big facade, a fugazi.
It's really tough to win in the NCAA tournament, right? Like in a one game sample size type of thing.
It can be,
but if you look at the full season, like if you peak, say Tennessee's peaking in November/January, at this point right here, basically. Tennessee won't get bad enough where they fall out of being a top 10 team, I guess, is the stat at its core. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's not like teams get really hot at the beginning of the year and then all of a sudden fall off the face of the earth. Eight of the top 10 stayed in the top 10, and the other two went to 11th and 12th.
So typically teams that show that they're good are not just going to completely fall apart.
Right.
They may lose a game here or there.
And in a one-game sample size in the tournament, you're not guaranteed – success, right?
That's true.
You're not guaranteed success.
I've seen Duke lose to Mercer. I've seen Duke lose to Lehigh. I've seen Kansas lose to Northern Iowa.
Don't forget Bucknell. They lost to Bucknell, too.
Bucknell, yeah, good point. I've seen us lose to Loyola. Nothing's a guarantee in the tournament.
That's why we have to embrace this team every night. Did we get an announced attendance last night? Did anybody
20,000 people.
20? Okay. So not
I don't know the exact number.
But it wasn't a sellout?
No. They never announced the sellout, but it was around 20,000.
Okay. I would think that we would have a sellout on Saturday.
I would, too.
And I would say they'll have something for T and probably Cheney on Saturday. Do you do both of them at the same time?
You think?
Because I imagine they got a big T video. They're gonna roll out.
Do you think they do? You think they'll walk them out? And I mean, because do you usually do that for assistant coaches?
Did Bob Shoop do it? I feel like Bob Shoop came out at a basketball game and got an ovation.
Did he?
I feel like he did. Now I know you do it for head coaches, obviously.
Right.
I feel like Bob Shoop did it.
Maybe he did. I don't remember.
Did they do it for Mike DeBoard? That would have been funny.
Mike DeBoard.
And that had been at the time when Tennessee basketball was not good. There would have been about 10,000 people in there saying, who?
Ladies and gentlemen, your offensive coordinator, Mike DeBoard. Please clap. Yeah. Woo.
I want to say they did a thing for Bob Shoop. Did you mean that more so about Cheney or T? Because they're going to do something for T. Like, that's different. That's not
if they don't do something for Cheney, I don't know if they'd do it for T.
That's why I think they'll do something for both.
Do you know for sure they're going to do something for T? I mean,
I don't know for sure. No, I assume.
I don't know. It just seems like a weird thing to do. I mean, I know T's our hometown son, but, well, no, he's not. This is not his hometown, but he's, yeah. Well, he won a national title here playing quarterback. But the thing is, I don't know. If you don't do that for any of your other assistant coaches and you do it for him, then what is, what are they thinking? What's Will Friend thinking?
You don't think they're going to roll out a video with like a, I'm coming home.
I mean,
coming
it seems
home,
a little extreme.
I mean, but like, that's your national championship winning quarterback. He's coming back. Like,
what if Will Friend gets jealous?
I don't think Will Friend.
How's Tracy Rocker going to feel about it?
Well, those guys probably got a welcome too. They probably brought the whole coaching staff out at a basketball game.
They usually do that when they announce like the whole.
Yeah, like I would say they brought the entire staff out to a basketball game.
I mean, they brought out the recruiting class one time with Butch.
I'd say Will Friend got
remember
his,
that.
I would say Will Friend got his ovation. Don't worry about Will Friend. Yeah. He got his claps.
You think he did? I don't know of anybody clapping for Will Friend.
I'll clap if they go ahead and ink Darnell Wright. 2 5-stars and a good four-star. I'll clap for Will Friend.
Supporting Will Friend for now.
Tennessee became the third major conference team over the last 20 years to outscore their first four conference opponents by over 100 points. The first two that did it, the 2000-2001 Duke team who won the national championship and the 2012-2013 Florida team who went to the Elite Eight. 12-13, that would be – no.
Florida?
Yeah. Who went to the Elite Eight? That's from ESPN Stats.
The Florida Gators?
No, the Florida Hurricanes.
I thought it was Florida State for some reason.
On ESPN Stats and Info, it says Florida. I don't remember Florida State going to any Elite Eights recently, so I'm going to say it's Florida. So you got one national championship team and one who went to the Elite Eight. Tennessee would at least like to make the Elite Eight. That'd be the floor, right? That'd be the floor on a successful tournament run.
At this point in the season, I believe so.
Yeah. Get to your programs. Second ever Elite Eight and still be a little disappointed if that was the ceiling.
That 12-13 team, that was Patrick Young's like eighth year at Florida.
Okay.
They had like Eric Murphy. I don't recognize a lot of these names. Michael Frazier II.
I mean, I remember Frazier.
Kenny Boynton.
Yeah, Kenny Boynton.
Florida State went to the Elite Eight last year.
Did they?
I thought I remembered that.
Florida State went to the Elite Eight last year?
Yes, they did.
What?
They did. They did. They
lost. Women's basketball or men's basketball?
In men's. They lost to Michigan 58-54. You remember because they beat Missouri in the first round, that 8-9 matchup? Then they beat Xavier. Xavier was the one seed, and they beat them.
Okay.
Then Gonzaga.
To be honest, after the second round.
Stopped watching.
Quit paying attention.
I was hurting too much.
Yeah. It was
I was hurting too much.
That was tough.
I don't think I watched any of the Sweet 16 games, so I must have missed them beating. Who did they beat in the Sweet 16?
Gonzaga.
Good for you, Florida State. My bad. My bad. I guess that makes a little bit more sense with them being a top 10 team, or at least, you know, being a top 20 team preseason and then getting to the top 10. Okay. They didn't start from the bottom, I guess. Came off of a Elite Eight run.
Well, they started from the bottom in 2016, but now they're here. They didn't make the tournament in 16.
Looking around the rest of the SEC, like I said, LSU goes to Ole Miss, wins that game rather convincingly. Rather convincingly in the second half. It was tied at halftime, but LSU pulled away. LSU's got some talent. Will Wade's got some talent. He's got good recruiting class, and they are playing pretty well. They did a Tennessee impression a little bit by having four guys in double figures.
The rest of this conference, all these inferior teams, I feel like they're just going to beat up on each other.
Well, I told you that, you know, when you look at the projections, no team was picked to finish better than 11-7.
Right.
Except Tennessee. Like, Tennessee was supposed to win this conference going away. If you look at the numbers as of last week, Tennessee's supposed to get to like 14-4 at least. And no other team was supposed to be 11-7, or better than 11-7, I guess I should say. Kentucky blows out Georgia at home, or Georgia's at home. Kentucky blows out Georgia on the road. Florida loses a heartbreaker in Starkville, and LSU runs away from Mississippi in the second half. Those were your four SEC games. Tennessee sitting in first place.
I really like that stat from ESPN, Stats and Info.
Uh-huh.
The first major conference team to beat their first four opponents by over 100 points.
Mm-hmm.
Or only the third team to ever do that, right?
Yeah.
The other one won a national title, and the other was an Elite Eight team.
And honestly, I would say that it even, like, your last-minute run to blow the Florida game out a little bit probably evened out by letting Arkansas have some garbage time buckets last night, right?
Yeah,
like, I think you could have beaten Florida by 3 or 4, and then, honestly, you could have beaten Arkansas by 30 if you wanted.
Arkansas outscored us 26 to, what, 15? 26 to 15 over the last few minutes of the game. Because it was at 91-61, I felt like we shut it off.
Yeah. Yeah. Tennessee sits alone at first place in the SEC. They are the only 4-0 team in the conference. LSU last night got to 3-0. South Carolina still undefeated. They play at Vanderbilt tonight.
I'm going to laugh if South Carolina goes through the conference undefeated for like the next couple weeks and they're sitting there at 11-7.
And then Tennessee
being undefeated.
And then Tennessee plays them and beats them by 40.
Just blitzes that ass.
Yeah, it's fun.
It sure is.
This is some of the perks of being a basketball school.
You know, Tanner pointed out to me last night, if we beat Alabama and get to that number one ranking, first game next week would be at Vanderbilt, just like the last time.
Well, Shan Foster ain't walking through those doors.
Does seem like the circumstances would be a little different.
Was it Shan or Shane? I know he spelled it like Shan. I always called it Shan. Yeah, the guy who played the piano and looked like Usher. Was it Shan Foster or Shane Foster?
Had to be Shane.
He spelled it S-H-A-N, so I always called him Shan.
Sean.
Well, Foster ain't walking through those doors. That big, tall shooter. That was good. That'd be fun. Get some revenge. What, 11 years later?
As number one.
go into Memorial and beat them down. Yeah, Tennessee's gonna have a real chance to get to number one when the rankings come out on Monday.
Is that important to you?
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah, this team deserves to be number one in the country. This team deserves to be the second program, the second team in program history to be ranked number one.
I expect that Alabama game to go about like the last four have.
Yeah, if it was at Alabama, I would have a little bit more trepidation. But being in Knoxville, like we said, I think Tennessee can roll out the basketball and play a B game and beat almost any team in the SEC, especially these mid-tier to bottom-tier teams. Now, I think you're going to have to play at least a B-plus game to withstand some of these teams' best performances, but I don't think Alabama's one of those teams.
I think next week it gets even easier. So,
who is it, Vandy?
And West Virginia, and they are awful right now.
Yeah,
we gotta keep our head on the swivel. You know, stay focused, keep rolling, keep getting better.
Who's next? That's all I'm asking. Give me the Goldberg music playing underneath it.
I just want us to keep getting better because I could see where it would get kind of stagnant against teams that are just not as good as us. You know.
Well, I think this team. I think that's where you get a benefit of having this team have a chip on its shoulder from last year. I can pretty much bring your entire core back that tasted some real success, but then, you know, had a heartbreaking loss.
They are seasoned vets.
They are a team on a mission, and kind of what we talked about to start the show, it's not so much about stopping one or two guys. There are, you know, five or six guys who can really beat you. Makes it tougher to take advantage of off nights because it's harder for, you know, multiple people to have off nights at the same night.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could, if Tennessee was ultra reliant on Grant or Admiral, you could say, yeah, maybe those guys have a bad game and Tennessee loses. Grant and Admiral have bad games. I still think Tennessee can take care of business. They did so on the road at Missouri, right?
That's just statistics.
That's just statistics. That was Talking Statistics with John and Cody. Stick with us to talk sports on Fan Run Radio. Back on the program, keep the phone lines open if anybody wants to call in. 865-546-8200. Anything else catch your eye last night? I mean, Tennessee was the main story here. College basketball had a pretty quiet night. I know in the NBA, there was a statement game. A couple statement games. The one and two seed, the top two teams in the West played. And the Nuggets have been doing this thing where they look like they're good. They look like they're ready to try to win the West. Nikola Jokic is a MVP-ish candidate. They felt good about themselves. They had a home game last night against the Warriors. You see what happened there?
They got blasted.
The Warriors came out and said, you know what, it might be a little bit of a time to reintroduce ourselves to the rest of the NBA.
Let's make sure people haven't forgotten who we are.
That's how it felt, right? It felt like that was, I don't know if that's the switch getting flipped. You know, everyone always talks about flipping the switch. These great teams can turn it on, they need to. I don't know if that means that they're going to try to turn it on for a prolonged amount of time. And DeMarcus Cousins is set to come back this week. But the Warriors went to Denver, a team that's given them some trouble over the last couple of years, talked some trash to them, and the Warriors came out and dropped a NBA record, 51 points in the first quarter. 51 points in the first quarter. It was 51-38 after the end of the first quarter. That's a halftime score for a lot of games.
So that is an NBA record?
51 points, yep. In the first quarter, they dropped an NBA record on them.
51 points. I would have thought
for a first. I don't think it's a record for a quarter in general, but I think it's a record for a first just the first quarter.
Okay.
So teams have scored more in a quarter before, just not the first quarter.
I would have thought at some point in NBA history there had been a 50-point quarter.
And it was basically just the three guys: Durant, Curry, Klay. Like, those guys came out and dominated. They hit a combined 18 threes, led by Curry's 8.
I mean, none of us really believed the Denver Nuggets were going to be there at the end of the day.
No. They haven't really entered our conversation of teams that might have a chance in the West. Like, they've got the one seed. They're doing a good job. Their coach, Mike Malone, deserves some credit. Like, he got wrongfully fired in Sacramento. He was the only guy that was kind of getting through to DeMarcus Cousins. DeMarcus Cousins liked him, and then the ownership fired Mike Malone kind of unfairly. And he's been in Denver for the last couple of years and sort of kind of getting them ready. And, you know, they missed the playoffs last year on the final night of the season. They lost to Minnesota. They brought him back, and they've been rewarded for having a little patience. Like, they're good. I think they are a playoff team. I don't think they're going to fall out of the playoffs. But no, I didn't buy them as a legitimate threat in the West, although they have been a good story between Malone, the young guys playing better, and like I said, Nikola Jokic being a MVP candidate, being the best passing big man maybe ever, at least in the NBA. Because some people, old people, will scream about Sabonis.
This is the first year I've heard of this player.
That's okay. I would say that's how it is for a lot of casual basketball fans, because I just said they missed the playoffs last year by one game, so you wouldn't have watched them in the playoffs. Now, maybe I love international basketball, right? I love international basketball. So this guy kind of bust on the scene in 2016 in the Olympics. Like, you could tell he was going to be a star in the Olympics.
You watch international basketball?
I mean, I watched the when FIBA, the FIBA World Championships and the Olympics. I watched those. Like, I'm not really, and sometimes, I mean, back in the day, especially the Euro basketball, nothing got me going like watching Spain and France. It used to get me going.
Yeah.
The Gasol boys,
mm-hmm.
Tony Parker, going head to head. That was good basketball. So yeah, I enjoy international basketball. So I, you know, Jokic kind of got on my radar in 2016 in the Olympics, but no shame in you saying you had never heard of him before. I think a lot of people are probably like that. But he was the guy, if you remember last week, I was telling you, had tied Wilt and Kareem in triple doubles already. He already had 20 as a center.
Mm-hmm. How tall is he?
He's a 7-footer.
Those are my favorite kind of players.
The 7-footers?
The 7-footers. The guys with the big long arms and the. I watched a documentary one time on Yao Ming. It's one of my favorite things I've ever seen. Back when he was, you know, when he mattered.
When this show first started, when Talk Sports first started 2 years ago, there was a guy who would call in and just want to talk about Yao Ming.
Oh, yeah?
We had a Yao Ming super fan.
Could have been me.
Was that your audition tape?
Could have been. I don't know. Go back, listen.
It wasn't you.
No, it wasn't me. I don't know. I just remember seeing this documentary. It was like the first time he came to America and went up against Shaq, and it was like this huge show.
Yeah.
You know? And he got the best of him.
Now, he's bigger. He's like 7'6", so he was bigger.
Yeah. Well, those are the guys. I just like those freaks, you know, those guys like that, like Bol Bol, just guys who are just so, like, his arms are as long as the doorway, you know?
I'll be honest, college basketball hasn't felt the same this season since Bol Bol went down.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. I've barely kept up with Oregon.
I have not watched one second of Oregon basketball since Bol Bol went out.
I watched every Oregon game with Bol Bol.
No, I haven't watched one second of Oregon basketball with Bol Bol, but I have definitely not watched one second without Bol Bol.
Guys like Bol Bol and Yao, they're just, you know, they're it's like this when you see people that big, you know, like Andre the Giant, it's impressive.
You like the freak book.
Yeah. Yeah.
You loved getting the freak book and going through there and looking at all the freaks, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. I was a big circus kid.
Whenever the Guinness World Record books came out, Cody was there. Let me see who the tallest man is. Oh, look at him.
That's true. That's very
true. Oh, wait, here's a picture of him standing next to the world's smallest man. Look at these freaks.
Or, like, there used to be that chart in the old wrestling, it was like a wrestling book or something. You know that chart that shows, like, Undertaker at 6'10", and then, like, all the guys who have been taller than him?
Oh, my God, this guy's fingernails are so long. Look at the way they curl.
Who was the guy the Undertaker wrestled at WrestleMania, like, 10, 12, right? You don't have the guy that Diesel? Wore like the skin suit or the.
You talking about Kevin Nash, Diesel?
No. This they guy, was it Goliath?
Well, this wouldn't have been WrestleMania 10, I don't
it
think.
Was like,
the case.
It was one of those WrestleManias, probably late 80s, early 90s. Guy was like 8 feet tall. You don't know who I'm talking about? He wore like a suit that was, he looked like a. He was in a suit that made him look like a gorilla or something. Or like a. God, how do I describe this?
I don't know, but I'm enjoying it. Keep going. Keep telling me about this big gorilla wrestling thing.
Giant Gonzalez. Thank you, Esteban. Esteban tweeted in Giant Gonzalez.
Okay.
You remember Giant Gonzalez?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't really into wrestling when I was 3 years old. Because he fought him in 1993.
You never seen how tall this guy was, though. You've a wrestling fan like you. You had to have seen these clips. Giant Gonzalez. He was like
it's supposed to be Bigfoot.
I don't know. He was billed at
he looks like Bigfoot.
7'7". I thought he was billed at like 8 feet tall.
I feel like you're talking about somebody in a gorilla suit. You're talking about King Kong Bundy.
No, it's the Giant Gonzalez is for sure the guy.
You see who the Undertaker fought in WrestleMania 12?
But he makes Undertaker look small.
Do you see who the Undertaker fought in WrestleMania 12? Anybody see?
Was it Yokozuna?
No! It was Kevin Nash. Like I said, Diesel. I did know that when you said WrestleMania 12. So give me some credit.
Congrats.
And that was like right when I was really into it, like 96. That was when my fandom took over. So you said WrestleMania 12, and I did say Diesel. And he's also 7 foot.
You remember Yokozuna?
Yeah, I remember Yokozuna. R.I.P.
What a beast. What did he die at? Probably like 32?
I'd say that's probably pretty accurate.
He was
maybe even younger than that, honestly.
He was a big fat guy.
He was a big old boy.
It kind of seems
600
like,
pounds.
Kind of seems like the WWE got a little bit lazy when they were doing these WrestleMania things because it's all Roman numerals until you get to the teens. And then it's just 13, X7, X8.
I think that they were just trying to help the fans. Like, wrestling fans aren't that good at Roman numerals, okay, Ben Lee?
See, there's the chart with the tallest wrestlers ever. The Giant Gonzalez was taller than Andre. And then the Great Khali, you remember him? Remember when he debuted? What was that, mid-2000s around No Mercy? Right?
They really went on a streak of trying to get The Undertaker to fight some tall guys at WrestleMania. Giant Gonzalez, King Kong Bundy, Diesel, Psycho Sid, Kane. I mean, they were trying to build the seven-footers.
But look how tall Giant Gonzalez
was. He's a tall man. I get it. You like the freaks. You're so excited looking at the freak book.
God, Khali was huge, too. Which I know that's with a woman, but he was tall. I remember when he wrestled, was it JBL that he debuted against?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Why would I care who the Great Khali debuted against? Why are you talking about
you're supposed to
the
be
Great
a wrestling
Khali?
Guy.
I've got a real sweet spot. Like anything from like 96 to 2000 and then anything from 2013 on. I took a sabbatical. There's a 13-year period where I don't know anything, okay?
You took a bad time off. I had see several people tweeted in Giant Gonzalez. They knew. It was WrestleMania 8, apparently.
Well, I knew 12. I deserve some credit. I demand some credit. You said WrestleMania 12. I think back because that was one of the first like VHSs I had, right? Was the In Your House. The In Your House right before WrestleMania 12. And Bret Hart and Undertaker. Or no, it was Diesel. Diesel and Bret Hart were fighting for the championship. Fighting for the championship in a cage match, right? And Diesel was getting ready to crawl out of the ring. And The Undertaker came up from under the mat and pulled him into the ring. And I was like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just remember Kevin Nash, VFL. So, I mean, we're still technically talking Tennessee basketball right now. You know, as he's walking out, he's just looking into the ring at The Undertaker. And he just keeps saying, I ain't afraid of the dark. I ain't afraid of the dark. And then he lost at WrestleMania. So, I guess, I mean, the dark got him.
I remember that well.
Yeah. The dark got him. And then Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Iron Man match is a full go after that.
Oh, that was one of the greatest matches ever.
Why are we talking about this?
Then Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, you remember the ladder match?
Oh, yeah. Why are we talking about this? How do we end up here?
Well, we were talking NBA.
We're talking about the freak book.
Tall guys.
Tall guys.
Yeah.
Nikola Jokic. I mean, look, I'm not going to be upset. This is you contributing to the NBA conversation. Warrior scoring 51 points. You talk about Giant Gonzalez.
Yep. They're all tall.
Nikola Jokic, tall, but not compared to the Giant Gonzalez.
No, Giant Gonzalez would have rattled him in the paint.
Now he's taller than the Undertaker. The Undertaker's 6'10", Jokic is 7 foot, although they're both freakishly athletic. Undertaker's probably more athletic. I mean, the way he would walk across that top rope, jump out of the ring, that's pretty athletic.
He's got to have good balance.
Yeah, I don't think Jokic could do that.
No, of course not. I mean, Giant Gonzalez is like half a foot taller than Yao Ming. Just outstanding.
No, he's an inch taller.
Well, what'd you say, Parker? 7'7"?
Yeah.
That's
Yao Ming was 7'6".
He was really like 7.
And he was 470.
He was really like 8. Eight feet.
You're right, because the wrestling business definitely never oversells people's height and weight.
Never.
So if he was actually 7'9", they would just tell him he was 7'7".
Right, yeah.
They didn't want
to make him seem too tall.
Okay, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
He was actually 8 feet tall.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely undersell the height and the weight. He's a half a foot taller. He is 6 inches taller than Yao Ming.
Did they oversell Big Show at 500 pounds?
I would say so. I mean, he might have been 500 pounds. He might have been.
I mean, he lost quite a bit of weight, but...
I mean, his body broke down like he was a 500-pounder.
Yeah, he had to lose weight or he would have died. Big Show's really...
That was at his most morbidly obese. Like, he had gotten fat. Like, young Big Show was an athlete.
Oh, yeah. When he had the long hair.
But then that was when he was the Giant.
He had long hair and two straps.
Yeah, that was when he was the Giant. Yeah.
When he went to the one strap. That's when you knew it was getting serious.
It says he's currently 383, so I'd say he was up there like pushing flat 5 clucks.
Yeah.
Right, at his biggest, though.
Yeah, yeah.
At his biggest. I mean, a life on the road eating hot dogs and smoking cigarettes and drinking beer, that'll do it for you.
Think Big Show smokes cigarettes?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so. Also in the NBA last night, we got our revenge game. The first time that the Timberwolves played against Jimmy Butler. Did not go well for the Timberwolves as they got beat 149 to 107. 149 points. 149 points.
That's a lot of points.
Not good for Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns, who combined to go 8 for 24.
Comes out to 74.5 per half.
That is accurate. Good math by you, Cody. Hour 1 in the books, hour 2 on deck. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.